There's a new film out about Barack Obama's courtship of a woman named Michelle Robinson, who would go on to become the First Lady of the United States. And guess what? It's supposed to be pretty good. That's just one of the films we'll be kicking around today. We'll also get to Hell or High Water, that has critics in a lather, as well as a Roberto Duran biopic, Hands of Stone, that features Mr. Boxing Film himself, Robert De Niro. Our critics today, once again, our one-time film professor, Cindy Haynes. Cindy, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
KSTUR, Steve Walker. Steven.
Good morning, Steve.
And Bob Butler, who reviews film for the Kansas City Star. You can read his reviews at butlercinemascene.com. Bob, how are
Hello,
you?
Hello, all.
You guys have some good ones this week, but I'm fascinated by this idea of a film about Barack Obama courting Michelle, and the focus is on their first date. It's called Southside With You. Cindy, tell us about it.
Well, after seeing it, I can't imagine anyone else's first date being so interesting and cryptic in a way. What you bring to the film your feelings about Michelle Obama and Barack Obama, and it really does taint how you see the movie. I know we have one person here who did not like it at all, and I think Bob was a fan of the film.
One person, just to end the mystery here,
yes,
would be Steve Walker.
Well,
I think
it
would be.
I'll tell you my reasons
He'll tell
why.
You why. Yes. But we have Barack, played by Parker Sawyers, who is known for his work in The Survivor, who does not an imitation. I think that's how he got the job, is that he does a pretty good Obama. But the director, it was written and directed by Richard Tan, and he was smart enough not to have both actors, when playing Michelle and Barack, do impersonations. But there is a flavor in the language they use, the how they sound when they talk with each other. And I honestly felt like I was sitting in watching this first date.
Wow.
And there were a lot of ways this could have gone bad.
Very, very definitely.
Steve Walker thinks it did go bad.
Well, you know, I went into it saying, oh, man, I am not ready for this. This just has the potential for a massive turkey.
Yeah.
And everything I was afraid would go wrong, they deftly sidestepped it. It turned out to be, It's like Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise, that famous, you know, walking around Vienna date movie, colliding with Young Mr. Lincoln, John Ford's story about the man who would become great, you know, later on in his life. I thought it was kind of effortlessly done myself, but Steve, you got another
idea. Away.
Well, you made it sound more interesting than it is. It's the only thing I have about it is it's pedestrian acting, directing, and script.
That kind of covers
what I look for in a movie.
I think if this were made when he was running for office, it would be considered propaganda. But as it is, I think it's gentle, it's sweet, it's romantic, and I absolutely enjoyed it.
Is it truthful? Is it true
to
life?
Well, the one thing, yes, they did go to the Chicago Art Institute to an exhibit, art exhibit. They did watch Spike Lee's film, Do the Right Thing. There was not a community meeting. That meeting and that date was at a different time.
That's a lot of stuff for one first date.
Yeah. But supposedly, it's...
Well, I did an interview with Richard Tan, the director, and he said that factually it's about 90% accurate. He had to invent dialogue, of course, and he moved a couple of, you know, things around. Like you said, the community meeting was on a second encounter, apparently. But, you know, here's the thing. You look at it, and you find yourself nodding. Yeah, that's them.
Well, he wanted to make this film of them and bring it out now. Why? I mean, what's the point?
I don't know that there is I think he wanted to do it while they were still in the White House because, A, it's a challenge. This guy was 4 years old when the Obamas met. He grew up, well, he didn't grow up with them, but as a young adult, he went through 8 years of an Obama presidency, and he told me he'd not only been fascinated by their politics, but by the way they act with each other in public. He said that was
the way they flirt, the way they communicate.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of stuff. And he said there was enough material in interviews they'd done and in the books they'd written to reproduce this day, to pretty much come up with what they'd done.
Well, he had a hard time getting it financed. It had a budget of get this, $1,500,000. I don't know any short film that's made these days that gets national distribution on such a small budget. Singer John Legend was one of the producers. I mean, they shopped it around and around, and I'm glad it got made.
Let's listen to a clip here. We'll set it up. Then when we come back, let's talk about how big of a gamble this filmmaker took making a film about a president who's still sitting in the Oval Office. What's the clip, Cindy?
It's really cute. It's Michelle Obama's parents asking her about this date that she has with an intern at her law firm.
And she went in pretty skeptical. She was
right. He had to charm her, and he did. And then his conversation with his mom about who this woman...
Actually, it's his grandmother.
I'm sorry, his grandmother. Yeah. You're right, Bob.
Going looking so raggedy.
Girl got herself a date.
It's not a date, Daddy. He's a summer associate I told y'all about, the one from Harvard Law. I mentioned I worked legal aid, and he invited me to a community event at the Gardens.
Huh.
Yeah, because it doesn't get more romantic than broken plumbing and underfunded schools.
And tell me the young lady's name again.
Michelle Robinson. She's my advisor at the firm, remember?
And tell me again what she looks like.
Well, she's tall.
What else?
What else would you like to know?
Well, where's she from?
Chicago.
Uh-huh. Which part?
The side that's predominantly black.
Okay, so she's...
Yes, too. Her skin is of the darker persuasion.
Good. So long as you're happy, Bar, that's all that really matters.
Thanks, too. Now, I gotta go, or I will be late.
Okay, love you.
I love you, too.
So what's this boy's name?
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama?
He's half white.
Boy, she sounds like Michelle Robinson.
She has no charisma like the real Michelle Obama. Seeing it 3 weeks after her amazing speech at the convention, so wan.
This is one of the interesting things. You see that as a negative. I saw this as she was somebody who was kind of unformed, and he gave her a focus. That was sort of how I viewed it. But anyway.
You guys are doing a good job intellectualizing it, making it better than it is.
How big of a gamble does a filmmaker make bringing out a film about a sitting president at a pivotal point in his life?
Pretty gutsy.
I wonder Obamas commented on it?
Not to my knowledge.
I don't know.
Someone was asked to get a copy of the film to Obama.
You'd think they'd be curious to see it.
Yeah.
And maybe their daughters, too. The film, again, is titled South Side With You. Two thumbs up from two of our critics, a thumbs down from a third. There you go. Let's move to a film, Frank Zappa, Eat That Question. Bob Butler, documentary about the life of the avant-garde musician Frank Zappa.
I'm a big Zappa fan, so this was a treat for me. Now, Zappa, this is based on TV interviews he did throughout his career. A guy named Thorsten Schutt, he's a German filmmaker. And by the way, Frank Zappa was always more beloved overseas than he was in his own country. One of the first things Zappa says in an interview is that a lot of people know my name, very few of them have heard my music or know why I'm famous.
Well, he was an acquired taste.
He was definitely an acquired taste. He could be adolescent in his humor.
Yes.
Some of his music, though, was absolutely brilliant, and there are flashes of it here. The movie is not what I would call a hagiography. It's not trying to make him out to be a saint. In fact, this is one of my favorite things about Zappa. The cast of Saturday Night Live voted him their least popular host ever, and he was in competition with Steven Seagal. So that's a pretty impressive...
What didn't they like about him? Just wasn't fun to...
Frank Zappa, you couldn't make him be funny. He could be funny and caustic, but give him a line to read, and it's just wooden and dead, and, it was nothing. Like a lot of geniuses, he could be a jerk. But I did love – this concentrates mostly on the development of his music and his social importance. I mean, he opposed censorship. He predicted the rise of a right-wing theocracy in America. He did all sorts of stuff back, before he died in the early 90s that was very prophetic. We've got a great clip here. Go ahead.
No, how he got started. He was asked during an interview.
How do you get started in music, Frank?
The title of this film, Frank Zappa, Eat That Question.
Well, the first time I ever got paid for playing music was when I was 15. And I started off as a drummer. And before I actually had a drum set, I used to play, I was rehearsing with this rhythm and blues band. We used to rehearse over at this preacher's house. And since I didn't have any drums at all, I had borrowed two pots from the kitchen, and I used to put them between my legs like bongos and play them with the drumsticks. And that's how I started off.
There is a great clip from the old Steve Allen show where Frank comes out with two bicycles and plays them like they're percussion instruments, which is kind of typical of his iconoclastic approach, you know, to music.
I read somewhere that there's an Easter egg in the film that you're supposed to stay till the last.
Boy, I'm going to have to check that out. I thought I stayed till the end, but possibly I didn't.
But what an interesting idea to just take his TV interviews over the years and splice them together, and you form something of a cohesive whole.
You do. It isn't a whole biography by any stretch of the imagination. It doesn't really talk about his family. It doesn't talk about a lot of things. But if you just want sort of an essential inundation in things Zappa, this is a great way to do it.
Okay, that film again, Frank Zappa, Eat That Question. A big thumbs up from Bob Butler for it. Let's move on to Hands of Stone. Cindy, this is the biopic about boxer Roberto Duran and his trainer, Ray Arcel.
This was a pleasant surprise.
Mm.
Robert De Niro is just one of the greatest actors of all time. And he's been doing little bit parts here and there. And, you know, he really hasn't been asked to do anything particularly challenging. I thought he was just going to have a cameo in this film, and that was it.
Oh, it's more than that.
It's much more than that, and it's as much a story about this trainer, Ray Arcel, as Roberto Duran. Arcel has trained, in his 70-year career, trained over 2,000 boxers. And this is a story set between 1964 and 1983 that was somewhat of a golden era in boxing. And he was Jewish. He was from Harlem, but he became the first boxing trainer to be elected to the Boxing Hall of Fame. And his performance in there, I think, is just outstanding. But there's an actor, Edgar Ramirez, who plays Duran, who holds his own in scenes with De Niro.
Wow.
And it, I don't know that much about boxing, and I wasn't all that familiar with his fights, Duran's fights with Sugar Ray Leonard, but
huge when I was a kid growing up.
Well, here's the interesting thing about Duran. He was fiercely anti-American for a lot of reasons, and that gave him a kind of fury when he had to fight an American opponent. His father was a American serviceman stationed in the Canal Zone who impregnated his mother and then left, so he grew up without his father. There is the Canal Zone. As a kid, apparently, Duran participated in riots trying to get the U.S. government to give the canal back to the Panamanian people. So there was that. You can look upon this film as Raging Bull light, in a way. It's about a guy who was sometimes as angry outside the ring as in.
I think the comparison maybe to Creed would be a bit more appropriate, because you've got the older generation and the new generation coming along. And between the two films, and I liked Creed, I'd pick Hands of Stone.
Huh. You weren't quite as high on
it. I wasn't quite as high on it. I felt that the writing and directing was a little bit muddled. I wanted the balance between Ray and Roberto I never really felt I knew whose movie this was. It just felt out of whack to me. But
there were a lot of subplots that were never followed to the end.
Yeah, Ray Arcel had a daughter who was an adopted daughter who was a heroin addict, and she just pops out of nowhere in the middle of the movie.
And then disappears. It has its flaws, but to be able to sit there and watch De Niro still doing it.
We have a clip from Hands of Stone, Cindy.
Yes, this is De Niro speaking as Arcel, the trainer. It's a voiceover.
It was Plomo that first taught Duran to channel his rage and his anger into his boxing. Duran's reputation as the hardest-hitting fighter in Panama kept growing. A reputation that would one day earn him the nickname Hands of Stone.
I've read the man could just hit you and it hurt all over your body when he did it. Yeah, just amazing.
Oh, we should mention the pop star
Usher.
Usher plays Sugar Ray Leonard, and he's actually okay.
Yeah. Mm.
No kidding.
But then again, you know, there was a little too much of that and sometimes not enough of that relationship between the two boxers. But it's a flawed film, but I found it to be very entertaining with a lot of momentum.
A good way to summarize Hands of Stone, the biopic of boxer Roberto Duran. Okay. Let's move on to a film, Steve Walker, The Land. It's a bleak inner-city saga about four doomed teens set in Cleveland's skateboarding hip-hop culture.
That's it. Okay. You just got
We're
it.
Done. Okay,
yeah, well, no, not many movies are set in Cleveland, so I've been to Cleveland. You were just recently.
I was just there. I liked it. I was impressed.
It's one of the strangest cities I've ever been to.
Why do you say strange?
Just the people I met, the things you see on the street. It was just really kind of an odd place. But anyway... So these teenagers are kind of doomed, yes, but aimless, and, you know, sit around and skateboard and smoke pot and father children, and they make a mistake of stealing a bunch of Molly, which is another word for ecstasy, from a drug queenpin, played by the incredibly talented Broadway actress Linda Emond. She's in Indignation as well, which we'll see later. She went to my list on my computer, supporting actress nominees, Linda Emond, for more Indignation. But she's not to be crossed. And it's just kind of follows their attempt to get themselves out of the mess they created.
And does it work?
It works okay.
There are too many cliches in the film, and the story's been told before. And the four guys are hijack a car, open the trunk, and find the drugs, and then, the drug dealers are going to go after. So you know all along. And I don't think the four young actors were all that talented or all that strong necessarily to carry a film and take this beyond a cliche.
It's nicely directed, and I don't have the director's name right in front of me.
Stephen Caple Jr.
Okay. Well, he does a very nice job. He's got a good eye. I will give him that for sure.
I think he should have paid more attention to a film like Tangerine or Fruitvale Station, which really get into the personality and the lives of the subjects of the film. And I just didn't have that sense when I watched it.
But you're out with me on Linda Emond's performance.
Oh, my gosh,
terrific.
Yes.
She's scary, scary, scary woman.
And that's kind of getting to be a cliche in itself, the what'd you call her?
Queenpin.
Queenpin, yeah. We're seeing more and more queenpins these days in movies.
Kind of a mixed film, Bob?
Yeah, but solid.
Solid, but you're not.
I'm not over the moon. No.
You're not over the moon.
The clip is of one of the kids, Cisco, fantasizing about being a famous skateboard artist.
The film is titled The Land.
Crazy. They're screaming his name. Oh, Cisco! Cisco! Cisco!
Hello?
You know, I always find that soundtrack, that music, so haunting. It reminds me a lot of that documentary made about those kids in Missouri.
Rich Hill.
Rich Hill. It just that haunting.
Well, you hear in that clip. You hear in that clip that these kids, you feel for them a little bit because they're still at the age where they have dreams that they want to realize, and they've made
many
bad mistakes.
You realize they're not going to realize.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But this is an okay film.
Yeah, it's okay.
Bob used the word solid. You're not over the moon
about
it. It's
not going to make my three to see, no.
Okay. The film is titled, again, The Land. Today we're visiting with our film critics, Bob Butler, Cindy Haynes, Steve Walker, about the latest, the good, the bad, and the ugly of films now showing, art independent and foreign films now showing on area screens. We've gone through a bunch already. Let's keep it going here. Let's go to Equity. A film, again, I mentioned that's getting some talk. A female investment banker trying to contend with corruption and betrayal. She takes a company public, and she's dealing with all kinds of sexism. Cindy, tell us about it.
Well, how appropriate. You had a show on women's rights.
Just yesterday,
yes.
And the battle continues as this film begins to portray here. Right.
Right. I had a lot of fun with this movie. It's like a feminist Wolf of Wall Street.
Ah.
You've got some characters who are neither good nor bad. Characters you hate, characters you like. You've got two amazing actresses. Anna Gunn plays the very ambitious Naomi Bishop. She's from well known from Breaking Bad. She played the wife. Also, Alyssa.
She's the wife in Breaking Bad. Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
Alyssa Reiner plays Natalie Figueroa, a Department of Justice lawyer, and she's well known for her role in Orange is the New Black. Women have to deal with sexist behavior, pay issues, the impact of pregnancy on a woman's career, balancing their public and private life. So you're seeing investment banking, you're seeing Wall Street from a female's perspective. It was all-female production, female financing, producing, directing, acting, and this is what they've come up with. And I found it to be a very entertaining film.
Huh.
Robert? I was bored. You're right that it makes the points about the stuff that women go through in the business world. No question about that. But none of it struck me as particularly new. And the basic setup, I've seen it done so much better in things like Margin Call and The Big Short. If you're going to make these points, it just seems to me that it got there a little late. The one novel thing it has is that it's a it's a feminine approach to the same subject. I just wish it was better. That's my take.
Wow. Okay.
I didn't know. Bob,
you have a good point there about it being a little too late, because it is inevitably compared to Big Short and Margin Call.
And those are borderline knockout movies, and this is just okay.
So it feels like it's treading over.
Yeah, well, I found myself losing interest. I did not think the characters were that interesting. I think they needed to be a lot more interesting. But
Wow. Okay. We have a clip here from Equity, Cindy.
Yes. Anna Gunn's character is asked what makes her get up in the morning.
What's that thing that really makes you want to get up in the morning?
Well, for me, I guess the simplest answer is I like money. I do. I like numbers. I like negotiating. I love a challenge, turning a no into a yes. But I really do like money. I like knowing that I have it. I grew up in a house where there was never enough. I was raised by a single mom with four kids. I took my first job on Wall Street so I could put my little brothers through college. But I am not going to sit here and tell you that I only do what I do to take care of other people, because it is okay to do it for ourselves, for how it makes us feel. Secure? Yeah. Powerful? Absolutely. I am so glad that it's finally acceptable for women to talk about ambition openly. But don't let money be a dirty word. We can like that too.
So that's the backbone of this film. That's the statement being made.
And how many times have we heard that in a film?
Have we heard it that much? I mean, from a woman?
No pun intended here, the issues that she addressed were skirted around in other films, but not addressed as directly as in this film.
Gordon Gekko said it, but not so eloquently.
Okay.
And in fewer words.
The film is titled Equity. We have a high grade and a low grade. Lots of disagreement today. Whatever happened to peace and agreement and tranquility here on...
Don't go to the movies for
it. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Just want to mention it's at the Glenwood Arts.
Okay. I like that theater. Okay, let's move on to Hell or High Water, a film the critics are raving about. It's about two brothers who plan to rob a bank to seek revenge against the bank that drove their family from their land. Bob?
Well, this one knocked me out. If you can imagine the Coen brothers' No Country for Old Men, filtered through the sensibility of a Bruce Springsteen ballad and filled with all sorts of ethnological pseudo-documentary moments.
Oh, what a great description.
It's a terrific, it's a bank robbery movie about two brothers. Their ranch is about to go under. How do they fight it? Well, they rob the bank that's getting ready to foreclose. They're going to pay the bank back with the bank's own money. To do this, they're smart enough not to go make a big hit. They just go and do a lot of little robberies, a few thousand each time. They're played by Chris Pine, who is better known, of course, as Captain Kirk in the Star Wars franchises, and Ben Foster, who has made a career of playing eye-rolling crazy criminals. What makes this interesting to me is that both of them, I think, hit career highs in terms of the performances they deliver. Pine is really, he's a man who's basically honest, but is doing something illegal because he feels it's his only option. The brother just loves the action. Ben Foster has gone overboard so often that to watch him rein it in is actually kind of wonderful. He achieves a sort of tragic grace by the time this movie's over, and I never thought those are words I'd apply to Ben Foster. Then you've got the old crusty Texas Ranger on their trail. Who would that be but
Jeff Bridges?
Who's kind of cornered the market on old fart curmudgeonliness, right?
Curmudgeonliness.
He's terrific. Yeah. What you don't expect is that this movie is both tragic and incredibly funny. It nails that sort of Texas way of looking at life, of using humor as a buffer to get you through it. So it's often wildly hilarious. I found myself laughing like crazy, yet at the end I was very moved. Great, good stuff.
Steve Walker,
good
what'd
stuff.
You think?
Yeah, when I came out and talked to Bob after the screening, I said, that's the best American movie I've seen this year.
No kidding. I've heard critics say it's the best American movie the last several years.
No, I wouldn't say that.
It was written by the same guy that did Sicario last fall.
Which was my favorite movie last year. So it's really just blew me away as well.
And it blew you away because?
Because it just so profoundly and expertly captures the life of these guys, these brothers, and the small Texas towns they live in.
You know, these are guys who are going to go out and vote for Trump.
Perhaps, yeah. Jeff Bridges gave one of the better performances I've ever seen him give. He's kind of bugged me in years since because he always mumbles everything, but here he's spot on. I see an Oscar nomination for supporting for him. It's just beautifully shot. Tersely written. It's just like a great novel.
You know, most American films are about one thing. This one's got layers, which is really nice to
see. Could it win Best Picture?
I think it
perhaps
has the potential.
And the other thing, Bob, you may agree with me, is that you don't know what's going to happen from scene to scene.
No.
There's not one predictable moment in it.
Well,
In fact,
it
takes you by surprise.
Yeah.
We've got a clip here. The two brothers have just pulled off one robbery. They're getting ready to do another, but they're taking a break at a Texas country diner.
From hell or high water.
You boys know how rich they're going to be? They don't know anything yet. You take them to the funeral?
Like I said, they don't know anything.
You want a little advice?
No, no, I don't.
Go see him tomorrow.
You got any idea how much I owe Debbie in child support?
Got enough in your front pocket to fix that problem right now.
You can't spare it, you know that.
Maybe we should hit another branch.
You know, you talk like we ain't gonna get away with this.
I've never met nobody got away with anything, ever. You.
And why in the hell did you agree to do it?
Because you asked, little brother.
It's very much about family and
hanging
together as a family.
Yeah.
These two guys are totally different. One's an ex-con, one's sort of a failed dad.
Then there's a beautiful scene with Chris Pine and his teenage son where he kind of says, sorry, I wasn't up to it.
Yeah, and he also warns him you're going to be hearing some bad stuff about us.
Right. It's a beautiful movie.
Well, it makes me want to see it.
Does it?
Yes.
Yeah. The film again, Hell or High Water, and your host will be at a theater near you to see it this week, and I'm really looking forward to it. Okay, let's move on here. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the latest art independent films showing on area screens here with Steve Walker, Cindy Haynes, and Bob Butler. This next film is titled Don't Think Twice. It's a comedy troupe contending with the success of one of its members, Bob.
Yeah, as a dad of someone who has been in the improv and comedy world, this struck me right between the eyes. It was written and directed and stars Mike Birbiglia, a stand-up comic who takes the advice of given to young novelists. Write about what you know. He knows this world. Basically, what you've got is a New York improv troupe. Eight people who live to get out there on Saturday night and do improv comedy. They do lousy jobs the rest of the week. They've just found out the theater they've been in for years has been sold to a developer and they're going to have to evacuate. One of their members is on the verge of stardom, which sets off all kinds of problems with these people that aren't about to be stars and never will be stars. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, it's about people who love doing comedy and have come to the conclusion, the realization that big break is never going to come for them, but they're going to slug away anyway. Hmm. That sounds sad, and it is, but it's also incredibly funny.
Yeah. Very funny, yeah. And what I liked was hearing the inside stuff about improv that Amy Poehler's written about and talked about quite a bit, and that is the rules that they have, one being say yes. That's the principal rule of improv, because it means if your partner throws some weird story angle at you, you don't say, no, we weren't at a diner. We were at a NASA.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You got to say yes and go with it.
It's also about serving the group and not showboating. And there's one character here who, whenever he thinks things are getting slow, starts falling into a shtick that he's developed because he says, everybody likes my shtick. Well, but that isn't what improv is about.
Yeah. Keegan-Michael Key is the guy you're talking about. And I've followed him for years, and I think he's a very, very funny actor. And I think he's perfect for this part.
Now, we got a clip here. This is after they've been told that their theater has been sold out from under them. And this is a serious discussion, but as you'll find, they're showbiz types, and they can't keep it straight. They have to start making jokes even about the worst thing that's happening to them.
From Don't Think Twice.
The theater's closing. We've got to be out of there in 4 weeks. They're selling. Another Trump building, I think.
New York City is over.
New York City, you're fired.
Breath for America, you're fired.
All of America, you're fired.
What the hell was that?
That was Trump.
JFK.
Your impersonation is so bad, you're fired.
It's very clever, very quick, and I laughed a lot.
And it feels real.
Yeah, it does.
So y'all liked it.
I did.
That's interesting. Yeah. That was one I wasn't expecting coming in here today, and you're all raving about it. That's interesting.
It's also showing at Liberty Hall in Lawrence.
Okay.
Don't Think Twice is the name of that film. Okay. Okay, how about a Meryl Streep vehicle here? Florence Foster Jenkins. It's a tone-deaf, wealthy socialite who thinks wrongly that she's an opera singer. Okay, Steve.
Well, she thinks wrongly. However, she was the toast of the town in the 1940s in New York.
It's a true story.
Yes, true story. In fact, her recordings that she spent a lot of her own money on making continue to be among the most highly sold and coveted records in the world because she was so terrible. But the upside is that she believed what she was doing. Could she sing? Doubtful. Did she sing? Yes. And the thing about that I enjoyed about it, which you didn't apparently, we can hear from you in a second, but Meryl Streep, she's one of my favorite actors for sure. And she learned all of these arias.
Nine
arias, note for note, in order to then sing them off key and off pitch. I think that's an achievement.
In itself.
Good old Meryl. I mean, let's be true to your craft and figure out how you're going to make this woman believable and interesting.
There's another film that came out earlier this year entitled Marguerite.
I was confused. That film was about sort of the same premise
here. Yes, it's set in the 1920s in Paris, but otherwise it's basically the same story of a woman who is just passionate about music but has a tin ear. And I really, really do recommend. Catherine Fraught plays this character, Marguerite Dumont. And there's an undercurrent in that film in this relationship with her husband, with the fact that you can buy people off to, you know, tell you lies. But it's a much, much better film. And I saw, and I know there's an audience for this film because it's been around for what now?
Just three weeks.
Yeah. But I saw it twice, and the second time it was so cartoonish.
That's a great word for this film. I didn't come up with it on my own. It was your word, but that's a terrific word, Cindy. That was my issue with it. I think it was just a little bit silly after a while.
But there's parts of it that are heartbreaking, because when she first gets her Carnegie Hall gig, which was also true. She bought the house, pretty much, and then filled it with soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
But she starts singing, and the audience starts howling with laughter. And you have to know that she heard that and knew they were laughing at her, because she's not up there to be laughed with.
Well, we have to talk about her co-stars here.
Hugh
Grant plays her common-law husband, a man who basically ran interference for her and indulged her, dilemma or fantasy, whatever. He's unbelievable in this.
He's very good. He's charming,
and yet he's not silly. You really understand that he loves this woman, a woman with whom he has never had sex because, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody, she had a serious medical issue that may have been responsible for that tin ear you talked about.
I haven't seen Hugh Grant in a long time. I know there were issues.
He looks good, I tell you.
Yeah.
And
then
Simon Helberg.
Keep yourself together.
So. Simon Helberg, who is one of the dweebs on The Big Bang Theory on TV, plays this concert pianist who gets sucked into this vortex thinking he's going to be the protege of this rich musical genius, and then she opens her mouth and he realizes his career
and he's just
gone down the tubes.
I've never seen The Big Bang Theory, but he was very funny. And in fact, we're going to hear a scene where he's listened to her sing. He's auditioning to be her pianist, and then he has a talk with her husband, played by Hugh Grant.
From Florence Foster Jenkins.
Hi. Mr. McMoon.
Could we speak, Mr. Bayfield?
Yes, of course. What is it?
Well, I thought I was being hired to accompany Madame Florence's lessons.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest with you, Mr. Bayfield, I think Madame Florence might need a little more preparation before she sings in public.
We've been rehearsing for a month.
Well, I know, but from time to time, she can't be a little... flat?
Flat?
A tad. I'm just a tad.
Carlo Edwards didn't mention any flatness, and he is the leading vocal coach in the city.
Jeez, Mr. Bayfield, we can't be talking about the same singer. I mean, her vocal cords, they don't phonate freely. Her phrasing is haphazard. As for her subglottal pressure, it defies medical science.
Is her instrument quite what it was? Perhaps not. But as Beethoven said, a few wrong notes may be forgiven, but singing without feeling cannot.
Mr. Bayfield.
He was terrific.
He really was.
Simon Helberg actually is an accomplished pianist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
He did play in the film, and that's one of the reasons he got the job, is because he could play those pieces.
So are we seeing Meryl Streep's 413th Oscar nomination?
Oh, without doubt.
And that's what this vehicle almost feels like it was designed to do, to give her one more here. Again, the film Florence Foster Jenkins. Okay, just a few more minutes left this hour. Let's go to Indignation, Steve Walker. It's based on a 2008 Philip Roth novel set in the 1950s. A Jewish college student contends with authority and his first love.
Yes, and I really like this. It's very smart. Logan Lerman plays the young man. He's not callow in the least. Very sweet guy. Comes from a humble Jewish family. And he meets this girl and falls in love with her. And then the movie takes a strange turn where it deals with a very contemporary issue going on college campuses, and that is what's called slut shaming, where there's a very great abyss between the double standard of what men are allowed to do and what young women are allowed to do. And so that goes on with his friend's feelings and opinions about the girlfriend, And he encounters, not surprisingly, a lot of anti-Semitism at the school as well, principally by his dean, played by Tracy Letts. Anybody want to?
Well, there's a great 15-minute exchange of dialogue between the student and his dean, which starts out being civilized, but it's like a cellophane over a bed of razor blades. Mm. On the surface, you know, they're very civilized, but there's just so much anger seething beneath it.
We have, I think, 3 minutes of that conversation between the two actors. It's really quite good.
Okay. Do we have time for 3 minutes?
Yeah, we do. We have the film is Indignation.
It's not 3 minutes.
It says here that your father is a kosher butcher.
No. No, it does not. I remember just writing down just butcher. That's what I would write down on any form.
Well, that's what you did write. I'm merely assuming that he's a kosher butcher.
He is, but that is not what I wrote down.
I acknowledge that. But it's not inaccurate, is it, to identify him more precisely as a kosher butcher?
Neither is what I wrote down inaccurate, sir.
I'd be curious to know why you didn't write down kosher, Marcus.
Sir, if you are asking me if I was trying to hide the religion into which I was born, the answer is no.
Well, I certainly hope that's so. I'm glad to hear that. Everyone has a right to openly practice his own faith, and that holds true at Winesburg just as it does everywhere else in this country. On the other hand, under religious preference, I see you didn't write Jewish, though you are of Jewish extraction. And in accordance with the college's attempt to assist students in residing with others of the same faith, you were assigned Jewish roommates.
I didn't write anything under religious preference, sir.
I can see that. I'm wondering why that is.
Mm-hmm. It's set in the 50s, we might add. I don't think mm-hmm. we said that. But mm-hmm.
Based on a Philip Roth novel.
Yeah, I think it's quite solid.
You liked it.
I did.
Yeah, I did. I did. It's a tough movie. It's not a happy movie by any stretch. And it's sandwiched between an opening and a closing set during the Korean War, which I found a little off-putting, but what happens in the middle is terrific.
Right, right, yeah.
And okay. And I found it a bit boring myself.
Boring?
Yes.
Okay, okay. How about Cafe Society, Steve Walker? It's set in the 30s. A young transplant from New York tries to make it in Hollywood. This is Woody Allen's latest film. I haven't heard a lot of great things about
every
this
year we say, is this good Woody or is this bad Woody? Mm-hmm. This one is middling Woody. It's set in the 30s or in the 40s? 30s.
Right 30s. About 1939, 38.
In Hollywood and New York. Jesse Eisenberg plays the Woody Allen stand-in, who wants to be a screenwriter, wants to go to Hollywood and become famous. The only thing worth seeing about this movie, I think, besides its beautiful cinematography, is Kristen Stewart, who plays a young woman who is, he falls and becomes enamored with, and he wants to date her, but she's got some complications I won't spoil. But she's terrific. She really is. And if you always forget, oh, Kristen Stewart, the Twilight girl, she's given a lot of great performances over the last several
Clouds
years.
Clouds of Sils Maria. Yeah. A terrific movie.
Yeah. How about somebody else?
Well, I while we're tossing praise around, I was surprised that I like Blake Lively's performance as the girl he ends up marrying.
Yeah.
She is kind of one of those pretty faces that I've always kind of shrugged off as being insubstantial, but here she really gave me something in a part that wasn't that big or that well written. It's just that she gave it a humanity that kept the movie going.
And Steve Carell's in it too. We might add. Mm-hmm. He plays Eisenberg's uncle.
For me, the weakest link was Jesse Eisenberg. I just have such a hard time watching him on the screen.
Some people do. We have a clip here from Cafe Society, Steve.
We do. Let's. I don't know where. I don't have written down.
Eisenberg's character is talking with Stewart.
Kristen and him on a date.
I don't think that's a very good idea, actually.
No.
I'm seeing someone.
Oh. What's he like?
Doug is a journalist.
Oh. I just thought since you had so much free time on your hands.
He travels a lot. And I really like spending my time with you. I hope that's okay. You know, you're very sweet. Have you heard that before? You have this deer in the headlights quality.
Thank you. Well, if I was your boyfriend, I would not travel. Or if I did, I would take you with me.
That's from the Woody Allen film Cafe Society and sort of Midland reviews for this Woody. We can't do the clip, Bob Butler. We have a final film, Captain Fantastic. Six siblings are raised off the grid by a father who wants to live a utopian fantasy. We got 15 seconds.
Imagine a tough love dad who has like a former hippie raising his kids in the woods to be anti-establishment and anti-everything else. Is this great fathering or is it a form of child abuse?
It is a Best Actor nomination for Viggo Mortensen
plays the dad.
But it's
a film that I felt sort of toys with the audience in kind of a what I found to be an irritating way. They first make him out to be a hero, then they basically suggest that he's doing terrible things to the kids, and then they end up back in the hero area.
That's an interesting argument, though, you have to say.
Yeah. Something else to put on your calendars, The Beatles, 8 days a week, a documentary by Ron Howard comes out in mid-September. Something to think about. I want to thank Steve Walker,
thank
Cindy Haynes, and Bob Butler. That we'll have their three to see up on our website later on today, kcur.org.